B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Thursday, April 18th, 2019. Your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on WWKB 1520 in Buffalo and ESPN Radio 97.7, 100.1, and 1200 AM in Syracuse, New York. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, to honor the Game Boy's 30th birthday, we'll be going over 10 handheld consoles that are worse than the Game Boy. Plus, we're officially 1 week away from Avengers Endgame, and since we're going to be busy next week, we've got to talk predictions for the end of the Infinity Saga. Those conversations are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's check in with Joe over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get a gaming news update.
Gaming News Update with Joe Sloan.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you important news.
CheckpointXP.com.
Gen.G, the company behind the team in the LCK, as well as the parent company of the Seoul Dynasty, has secured $46 million in funding. The chief investors are actor Will Smith, Clippers minority owner Dennis Wong, and Japanese soccer star Keisuke Honda.
I'm sorry.
Will Smith!
Go back.
Yeah!
Will, like, Fresh Prince Will Smith?
Yeah, he is making the investment.
Independence Day Will Smith? That same one?
Yeah, Wild Wild West Will Smith.
The one with the really weird kids and married to Jada Pinkett?
Yep, that's the one.
He's now invested in the Seoul Dynasty.
Yep.
That's awesome! Oh, it's gonna be so hard for me not to root for Seoul now.
That is pretty great. I think it's nice to see celebrities taking esports seriously enough to, you know, put down money on it.
Yeah.
I have to wonder, like, where he got the insight to invest in esports, if that's something that,
I bet you it was Jaden.
See, that's what I'm thinking, if that's maybe some of his kids' influence and
or
you know.
Be Willow. Actually, Willow looks like she'd be more into esports than Jaden.
I mean, it's total speculation, but I'm just saying, like, it's always kind of a bummer when you hear, like, oh yeah, my accountant came to me with this opportunity and thought it would be really good.
That's not what I want to hear.
Yeah, that's not as fun.
The Dallas Fuel are set to host the first home weekend in Overwatch League next week. They've branded it the Ultimate Weekend and are looking to create a festival-like atmosphere complete with a cosplay contest and a live performance from Karma Fields. The event seems to be a hit as they've already sold out the 4,500-seat Allen Event Center in Dallas for the entire weekend.
They're going to the right place first.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. They are going to the right place first. Well, I know we give Dallas a lot of crap. But if
the Texas Triangle is really, really taking off
in Dallas in particular, if there's a place where Overwatch League is a hot ticket, it's Dallas.
Interesting.
T1 is continuing their expansion in the world of esports, setting their sights on the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate scene. They've signed Anti to represent them in tournaments and also brought in Larry Lur as both a player and content creator.
Nah, that's pretty cool.
I mean, I'm pretty excited for that. Nice to see T1 moving further into the esports scene, getting away from just League of Legends. Obviously, they've looked at Rocket League and a couple other games.
Yeah,
as well.
That's the thing. I think what surprised me the most about this is that they're specifically expanding into like the FGC type scene. I think we need more big sort of names and stuff if we want the prize pools over there to start increasing.
Well, I mean, we have seen other endemic organizations kind of recognize the value of getting into Ultimate. You know, Team Liquid is obviously picked up Hungrybox. You know, there's a whole bunch of acquisitions that have been happening in the Ultimate and Smash scene, you know, within the last few years that, I think that's probably a good acquisition.
And I think also they were waiting sort of for the kind of deck to all fall when it came to Ultimate. If people still were going to be latched on to Melee,
that was the big question.
That would have been the thing that got investors and advertisers to be a little bit more apprehensive.
Jeff Kaplan has unveiled the next Overwatch map, and it will be taking us to Havana, Cuba. The map looks to be a hybrid map, taking players first through the streets of Havana before moving into a distillery and finally to a stormy coast.
Mm-hmm. It's the same map that's being used in the Storm Rising event right now, currently. It's pretty cool. I'm for it.
That seems to be the way they're introducing some of the new maps, too.
Smart way to do it.
You usually can expect a new map with an event like that.
Microsoft has confirmed the rumors of an upcoming digital-only Xbox One. They've announced the Xbox One S All Digital Edition, which will be launching on May 7th for $250. The system comes with Minecraft, Forza Horizon 3, and Sea of Thieves, as well as a special offer price for Game Pass.
I feel so bad for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Like, they just got nothing. Like, this is this really supposed to be attractive for someone to buy the system at this point?
No.
In 2019?
Especially if
really?
You already have a PC.
Really?
Yeah. Right. Well, they talked about it for a little bit, just saying, like, this is something that was launched in response to people saying, hey, if we're just going to go digital, why isn't this an option?
Minecraft, Forza, and Sea of Thieves. Really? Like, who is that? Is that, like,
oh,
who's that targeted at?
Those specific three games?
Yes!
I have no idea.
Who's your target audience? Yeah, like, it is. It's so random.
Everyone.
While the dust is still settling following the release of the first trailer for Episode 9, an interviewer asked Lucasfilm boss Kathleen Kennedy if anything would ever be done with the Knights of the Old Republic era.
Oh.
She replied, quote, "You know, we talk about that all the time. Yes, we are developing something to look at. Right now, I have no idea where things might fall, but we have to be careful that there is a cadence to Star Wars that doesn't start to feel like too much."
It's happening! You know what? And that's actually, I think that she brought up a really good point, because I think at the point where people were starting to backlash against things like Solo, it did start to feel like Star Wars was getting too much.
A movie a year was too much.
It was fatigue.
It was absolutely too much, because it wasn't just
Marvel. Do it then.
Well, Marvel. The stories are divergent enough.
That's true. Because we've recognized that every single Marvel movie is like thematically entirely different, right?
Like that's fair.
You know, a lot of the early stuff, the first Captain America, that's like a period piece, and like kind of like an old school World War II movie. But then Winter Soldier is like a modern Jason Bourne movie.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's the actual mechanics of the movies are different enough from movie to movie that I think it remains interesting.
Yeah.
Star Wars doesn't have that same appeal. Yeah. It's sci-fi, and more sci-fi.
There's a certain way you have to shoot it creatively to make it still feel Star Wars.
Right. So, yeah, that's very true,
there's
too.
There's a lot of directorial...
There's a lot of diamond wipes that you have to include in there for no reason,
yes,
because George Lucas was really obsessed with diamond wipes.
A couple weeks ago, we talked about the first 10 games that would be on Sega's upcoming Mega Drive Mini. It included fan favorites like Sonic the Hedgehog, Shining Force, Echo, and Comic Zone. We've now got the next 10 titles they include, and they'll be including things like Earthworm Jim,
Streets
of Rage 2,
yes,
Sonic 2, and Shinobi 3. 20 more titles will be unveiled between now and the launch on September.
Y'all might have sold me.
I told you, Norris.
Y'all might have sold me.
I mean, that was your biggest criticism, that Streets of Rage was not included on there. Boom, it's there. And you got Earthworm Jim.
And Sonic 2.
Let me tell you. You know what's going to seal the deal for me? There's one title that's going to seal the deal for me. You want to guess what it is?
NHL 95.
No. There are two, now that I think about it. Now that I think really hard about it.
Give me one.
One, I'll give you one. Booger Man, a pick and flick adventure.
Vector Man. Yes!
Nailed it.
Yes.
I love Vector Man.
Vector Man's great.
Especially, I mean, the music that we got going on behind us is a little bit reminiscent of Vector Man.
Yeah.
I love Vector Man. Put Vector Man on the throwback console and you might sell me.
Yeah.
Also very important to mention is that Time Magazine has recognized Tyler Ninja Blevins on this year's list of most influential people. He'll be joining the likes of Brie Larson, The Rock, Nancy Pelosi, Brett Kavanaugh, and the Pope on the list of top 100 most influential people.
This is about the same amount of people.
We cannot understate how big of a deal this is.
This is awesome.
This is huge. Like, this is the first, you know, like, PewDiePie only got so far. Like, Markiplier only got so far. This is really the first dude to, like, break out into mainstream stardom.
The most mainstream.
Because of what he does on Twitch. And I think, you know, like, this is a case of, like, the numbers just don't lie.
Yeah.
There are so many people that are watching his stream and taking cues from him that, yeah, to include him on the list of top 100 most influential people. Dude, I can't I can't tell you how many people I've seen poo-poo this also.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
See, and that's ridiculous, man.
Like especially people I know as gamers that are like, oh, that's nonsense. He shouldn't be listed in the top one. He absolutely
no, look,
should.
Even, you know what
even,
that is?
When you're host, even if you fail at people to get the do the floss dance, the fact that you're on New Year's Eve coverage.
Even right. People who are hating on him are being influenced by him.
You don't even have to like him. Just that, dude, he's good at what he does. He even if he plays a game that you don't like, he's good at what he does. And you know what those people are? They're the old and tired. Okay?
They old refuse, and busted.
They refuse to look at what the kids are doing, and that is when we're talking about real influence.
And that's all for the Checkpoint XP Gaming News Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Joe, for the update. Mortal Kombat 11 is set to launch on April 23rd, and it sounds like NetherRealm aren't wasting any time in getting the game's esports scene underway.
Yeah, Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment and NetherRealm Studios are launching a 9-tournament global Mortal Kombat 11 competition with a $255,000 prize pool.
Hot damn.
Yep,
all right.
It's going to be 9 tournaments, which is going to be kicking off with Combo Breaker 2019. Those 9 tournaments are going to have a $155,000 prize pool in total and will also serve as qualifiers because the top 16 players are going to get invited back for Final Combat in Chicago with $100,000 on the line.
Okay.
So I gotta say, Chicago, who's going?
Oh, I'm going.
Like
road trip. Checkpoint road trip.
Checkpoint road trip.
Cause,
going?
I mean, I'd consider if I didn't have to drive it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's like 5 hours away by car.
Drive is 4.
I mean, I've done it before. I went to, what was it, Riot Fest like 3 years
three
ago?
Three and a half if you... But anyway,
we don't have an Ohio license plate.
There you go. But no,
6.5 if you do.
Yeah, legit though. I think this is good. I think this is a good sign towards investment. Because listen, $250 investment rounding up, dude. They are going to sell way more than that in copies of this game.
Well, can we talk about the $255,000 prize pool here?
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
Yeah, that's going to do. We've talked about how small prize pools are specifically in the FGC. Could Mortal Kombat be paving the way forward for larger prize pools?
I think so.
And setting the standard.
I think so.
Does it still have that kind of cachet within the esports scene?
Yes. Since NetherRealm's really started taking it seriously, and with the last Mortal Kombat being as good as it was, definitely.
I mean, they're I will give them this. They are getting mighty aggressive. I have noticed, you know, I follow Xavier Woods on Twitter. I've noticed more than a few times the stuff that he's promoting for MK11 and the stuff that Up Up Down Down is going to be doing with it. So they're getting aggressive about trying to put together an esports scene. You know, $250,000 is a really good way to turn people's heads. Do you think that it's going to take talent away from other games and get them under MK11?
Well, without a doubt, because if you got somebody like Sonic Fox, who's a master at virtually everything NetherRealm makes, he's going to be in this.
Yeah, and if you can play in Mortal Kombat for a $255,000 prize pool, or Tekken for a percentage of that.
Right.
Exactly.
I'm playing Mortal Kombat.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, depending on how many games other people are overlapping in, it's definitely going to take talent away from anything else that was going on.
So, who are you expecting to see in this circuit?
Sonic Fox, and I don't care.
Nice.
There's no other talent that you're expecting to jump ship over for a quarter of a million.
There's plenty of other talent. There's talent that's already involved in those NetherRealm scenes. So that scene is going to get revitalized.
Well, I'm just saying, like,
Kazunoko already plays like 3 different titles, doesn't he?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, who is going to jump ship from where they're active? I mean, you know, you've got people who are playing all sorts of games right now, and there's tons of visibility. $250,000 is a big deal. That's a bigger prize pool than really anything else that I can mention for the FGC.
Yeah.
Who's abandoning Ultimate? Who's abandoning Street Fighter?
Well, that's the only thing, and that's the issue, is that you haven't seen a lot of crossover from the NetherRealm games into the other games. So you only have a handful of players that are going to be moving out of those other fighting games because there's less overlap. Sonic Fox really is the only one that's done it, but I think what you're going to see is you're going to see somebody who hasn't previously crossed over or moved over to a new game.
Attempt to do so.
At this point. That is a very tough question, sir. One that right now I don't have an answer for.
Yeah, I'm going to be mighty interested to see who jumps on that MK11 bandwagon. And listen, I got to hand it to NetherRealm. They're being very aggressive and very smart about this. They're going to end up with a mighty robust esports scene if they keep throwing money at this. So, listen, we want to hear from you. Are you excited for an MK11 esports scene, especially to the tune of a $255,000 prize pool? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll be going over our predictions for Avengers Endgame. And no, we haven't seen any spoilers. That conversation will wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, in honor of the Nintendo Game Boy's 30th birthday, we'll be going over 10 handheld consoles that were way worse than the Game Boy. Stick around. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on 98.5, the Sports Hub of Boston, as well as the Team 980 in Washington, D.C. Make sure you're following us on our officially partnered Twitch channel over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. We've got tons of new emotes, including each of our beautiful faces, as well as not one but two cat emotes. Tali and Fritz, our actual cats, are now Twitch emotes, and there's only one place to get them. That's over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. XP. If you grew up in the 90s, odds are you owned a Game Boy of some variety. The handheld system from Nintendo has turned 30 years old, and in celebration of that birthday, we're going to be going over a list of the top 10 handheld consoles that were really not very good.
Yeah.
They were a lot worse than the Game Boy.
Yeah, we were going to be kind of snarky and do a top 10 list of handheld systems better than the Game Boy, but we couldn't think of 10. Mm-mm. So instead we're going
I don't
the
think that there maybe were 10.
I doubt there was.
I mean, there would have been 10 with controversy.
There you go.
Let's put it that way. First of all, does anyone else feel intensely old by the fact that the Nintendo Game Boy is turning 30?
Yes. Sure
the do. Nintendo Game Boy is 10 years younger than I am in North America. I don't like that. But
I'm only 4 years older than the Game Boy. I was four when the Game Boy came out.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this list comes to us courtesy of James Holloway, who's a writer with New Atlas, and he starts it off with the Watara Supervision of 1992.
Okay.
The Watara.
He writes, this budget alternative to the Game Boy came bundled with a game called Christ Ball, presumably because Christ is exactly what gamers shouted when they switched on their Supervision for the first time.
That's C-R-Y-S-T,
yes,
by the way.
It was actually a licensed technology, hence being known as the Quickshot Supervision in the UK, and almost exactly aped the D-pad, A, B, and start and select buttons from the Game Boy. Not to mention the green monochrome screen, which in most versions sat atop a weird bendable neck.
This is awful.
Wow. How many other games came out for it, or was it just Christ Ball?
I'm assuming not very many.
Oh, man.
Number nine, we've got the Mega Duck from 1993. Don't
what?
Worry.
Who's naming these?
The Mega Duck?
That was the name in Japan. It did have a different name in America.
Like, duck?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, all right. Here, the Mega Chicken?
The Mega Duck would be the most successful portable games machine of all time on the strength of its name alone. In reality, the machine was very much like the Supervision, a cheap Game Boy clone with precisely zero third-party software support. It was known as the Cougar Boy in the Americas. So it's possible that you don't remember that name either.
Phrasing.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So number eight, we've got the Nintendo Virtual Boy of 1995. And I do just need to remind you, they did market that as a portable system.
All right. All right. Listen, as somebody who owned a Virtual Boy, I did have to use the packet in a separate bag with the stand and the legs to take it over my grandma's house. And if that's what they mean by portable, fine.
It was a production.
What they mean by portable was in the promo picture, they had a kid lying out in the grass, laying on their back using it.
That was the only way you could play it.
That's how it was portable.
That is the only way you could play it.
Yeah. So number seven, the Wonder Swan from 1999.
These are the worst names.
So this one actually released in Japan and actually got a decent amount of success before it was relegated to oblivion by the release of the Game Boy Advance. Interestingly enough, you want to know who designed the Wonder Swan?
Oh, no.
It was Gunpei.
Gunpei Yokoi was the designer of the Wonder Swan.
You know, when you look back and see, like, the Mega Duck, the Wonder Swan, it's no surprise that Microsoft is making, like, the Anaconda and whatnot.
Yeah, they're just picking up from where these people left off. Next, we got the Cybico from 2000. You might actually remember this one. It was a Russian-made device that looked like a walkie-talkie.
I sure don't.
It had a handheld computer with text messaging support of a range of over 300 meters.
I do remember this.
And
I
it was also an MP3 this. Player, because in 2000, nope. everything had to be an MP3 player.
I do remember this.
I owned not at one all. Of these.
What?
I got it at a garage sale for $4.
Wow, okay.
I overpaid by $3.
Did you ever try to text message anyone else with it?
No one else had one, no, so I couldn't.
I mean, if you had kept it on all the time, I'm sure that if you had walked past anyone else that had it, it would have dinged you or something.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what would have happened.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on WXSM Tri-Cities, Tennessee, as well as ESPN Phoenix 620. We're currently going over the top 15 systems that are worse than the Game Boy.
Yep, so up next we've got the N-Gage from 2003.
My God, first yes. one I remember that I know of.
Listen, oh my God. I had my best friend had an N-Gage, and he came to me talking about it like it was the best thing ever invented. You had to talk on it like a taco.
Yeah.
Like a sideways taco.
Yeah.
So, it was outsold by the Game Boy Advance by a factor of 100. And that's why it didn't last.
No, of course it wouldn't.
Number four, the one that would get my vote for worst of all time, the Gizmondo from 2005.
Oh, for how much money they wasted.
Yeah, it had a multi-million dollar celebrity endorsed marketing campaign behind it. And only moved 25,000 units, making it one of the greatest commercial disasters in gaming history.
It's like Gizmondo was like synonymous for failure.
Yeah.
It was like
if you paid $250 for it, you could get the version where you only had to where you had to watch ads. You had to pay $400 for the ad-free version.
Yeah,
are you kidding?
No, that's
what?
Very true. That
and
actually
when you pull up a picture, you remember you've seen this.
I have definitely not seen it because I pulled up a picture of it earlier today, and I was like, I have never seen this before in my life.
You bugging?
No,
this was
never
everywhere.
Saw it. No, never saw it.
Number three is the Digiblast from 2005. Conceived in the Netherlands as a device for children, the design was already dated even by 2005's cave dwelling standards. Despite the low price, it failed to make an impact, perhaps because children didn't want and have never wanted a quote personal media center, which is what it was called.
Ew.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I feel like, you know, those toothbrushes that would play MP3s in your mouth? I feel like those outsold this.
God, everything did have to play MP3s. Number two is the Pandora from 2010. It was a Linux device, which was built in with a homebrew fans in mind. It ran an emulator for the Dreamcast, PlayStation, N64, and other old gaming machines.
Well,
it cost $500.
That's A, not legal, and B, what?
I was about to say, it cost that much so they can make sure they pay all their legal fees.
Yeah, well, it shipped a couple thousand units and then went open source. And number one is the Kanu from 2010. It was also an ill-fated Linux-based handheld machine.
What's going on with Linux?
Yeah, the design was okay. It had a $150 price point, but in 2010, it had no original games for it. It was only emulated titles.
I mean, I feel like 2010, I would have remembered these.
No, N-Gage is the only thing I've heard of.
Like,
the Virtual Boy.
In the Virtual
Boy. Well, yeah. But I mean, like, were these failures outshined by the monumental failure that was the Oya console?
No, I remember most of these. I can't lie. I remember most of these. But
I don't remember hearing of any of these.
Well, and the point is, the Game Boy was so good that it drowned out almost any other handheld console. That was a list, by the way, that did not include the Sega Nomad or the Atari Lynx. Two more systems that the Game Boy and its little monochrome green or black screen killed.
That's true. The Game Gear.
Well, the PSP did well enough. I don't think that the PSP...
I wouldn't have put it
as worse.
No, it wasn't.
No, it was competitive.
UMDs was a failure of an idea.
All right, listen, we're going to have to leave the discussion right there, but we want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily, we are officially 1 week away from Avengers Endgame. So it's time for us to call our shot. What's going to happen at the end of the Infinity Saga? Stick around. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. My name is Nate Bender. So glad to have you locked in with us. I want to thank everyone listening on the sports beat of East Texas, 104.3 in Carthage, 103.9 in Marshall, and 100.7 in Henderson, as well as 1250 and 94.5 ESPN San Antonio. Check out our website over at CheckpointXP.com, and while you're there, make sure you sign up for the Checkpoint XP Nation newsletter. Get behind-the-scenes insight, photos, and access to contests and unique content. All it takes is an email address and a zip code, so sign up today at CheckpointXP.com. With Avengers Endgame only a week away, we're running out of time to give our predictions with 21 movies leading up to the conclusion. Guys, what are you expecting here?
Death.
That's Man. The thing.
We already got the death.
More.
Well,
more
yeah.
death.
So
he snaps away the other half of the universe.
So, okay, in Infinity War, we got the snap. We got half of life as we know it being snapped out of existence.
Sentient life, because I ain't see half the trees get snapped either.
Okay, fair point.
Although they did say that even plant life was included in that.
I ain't see it.
We haven't seen any evidence of that.
Also, to be fair, the way that plants grow with half all other life gone, they grow back relatively quickly.
That's
so
true.
Anyway, we're getting a little bit bogged down on minutia here, guys. So
as we do.
So okay, so we are left with a truncated cast obviously going into Infinity War.
Yep.
So let's take stock of who we have. We of course have Cap.
All right, we got Captain America, yep. Regular human, he ain't yep. doing nothing. We got Tony. Yep. All right, Tony around.
He's still out in space,
Nebula.
With Nebula. Yeah.
All right.
Thor survived.
Thor's on Earth.
Thor's a god.
War Machine.
He's chilling.
War Machine.
War Machine, yes. Rhodes.
Hulk.
Banner, yeah.
Yep, Hulk Banner.
Captain Marvel's here now, we know.
Captain Marvel is
That's
coming
right.
back.
Hawkeye and Black Widow.
Yep. Hawkeye, Black Widow, yep.
And Ant-Man and Rocket.
Ant-Man, okay. Rocket. And I'm pretty sure some parts of the ensemble cast from Black Panther are still
yep,
alive
yep.
as well.
Yes, I think M'Baku is still around.
Is Shuri, did Shuri bite it? Did they confirm?
Yes.
She did. She got
Shuri
dusted.
Got snapped.
Okoye is still around.
Okay, got it.
Yes.
And we know that Valkyrie is apparently going to be coming back as well, Tessa Thompson.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Out of all them, only two or three might actually really be able to do something.
So,
Thor, Hulk, and Stark, maybe?
Maybe.
So, all right. We've got a lot of trailers that have come out. And then you've also got the Russo brothers out there going like, yeah, we shot stuff that we knew was just going to be for the trailer.
Yeah.
We've got trailers that we effectively cannot trust.
Yeah, none of it can be
because
believed.
They even joked recently in an interview that, you know what? Maybe every single frame in those trailers was fake. You don't know.
So we're going into this with a fairly blank slate here.
Yeah, you can't trust anything.
Mm-mm.
So the last scene that we get of Infinity War is Thanos looking out over a job well done.
Yep.
Yeah.
And how does it open? How do you open Endgame after that?
Show the devastation.
Yeah, you show, you know.
Are they looking? They're looking over the numbers.
No. I think you show places that should be like rife with life, like elementary schools, right? That are just overgrown with plants because you don't have the kids to fill them anymore.
Well, you could do that. I mean, even just showing elementary school rooms that are half full.
But like, I
don't think you go that literal. I think you go with like. You show, like, you know, missing persons.
We know for sure that's
part of it, too, yeah.
Are we picking up in the immediate aftermath of the snap, or has some time passed?
I think it's months after.
I think there's a time jump, yeah.
Not a big one, but I think you should. I think trying to make it immediate cheapens how much is actually lost.
Well, that's the thing, is I would like to see some of the immediate aftermath, even just like the Avengers returning home and just be like, dealing with it. And then like the first 5 minutes of the movie maybe is picking up with the last one off, and then, you know, 3 months later,
yeah,
that sort of thing. Like maybe establish like Tony and Nebula getting on a spaceship and leaving back for Earth or something like that.
So okay, so we've got to get two pieces of the puzzle back to Earth, which is Nebula and Tony,
right?
So that's up for grabs how that happens.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they're in the ship.
We've seen that they are clearly going to get a ship.
Right.
Maybe if we can trust the trailer. Who knows? Maybe they die on Titan.
You know
who
what?
Knows?
Really quick, scenes that probably aren't in the movie. I don't think that whole Tony recording a message to Potts, I don't think that's in the movie.
Oh, you might be right about that.
You could be.
So one of the things that Robbie and I talked about on The Other Identity was the sequence where they're outside of the Avengers compound. It looks like that's where they are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're all kind of staring up at something.
There's a big gap in the middle where someone was edited out.
Right, where clearly someone was edited out. And in the most recent trailer, it's shown to be Pepper Potts in that spot.
She's front and center.
So let's presume that they're looking up at whatever is bringing Tony back to Earth.
Yeah. Sure. That said, what? You edited out Pepper Potts? You thought that was too big of a spoiler?
No, no, no. This is why. Because if that scene of Tony giving the speech is fake, you don't put Pepper there because then you know he makes
True. Oh, Robbie, you nailed it.
This is all stupid.
It is stupid.
I don't believe any of that trailer.
We should. And every time somebody says something and I want to like refute it or give evidence from the trailer, I'm like, no, it doesn't matter.
First of all, I think it's hilarious that there's so much that we don't know about the trailer and can't.
I think it's great.
I think it's awesome.
Marketing.
Over the last 5 years, I've gotten so sick of being able to know what's going to happen from trailers.
Yes,
I agree. I've gotten so sick of that trend.
Thank you.
And it is kind of the Russo brothers.
If you have the time and you have the budget, why not?
Yeah, of
why
course.
Not?
Yeah, exactly. If you're doing so well and you have so much money, they say, "Hey, we're going to film extra scenes and make a weird trailer." You want to know
what I find interesting is that even in all of the trailer, fake or not, we haven't seen the Hulk a single time.
Nope.
No, we've only seen Banner.
And we have been, I'm pretty sure at one point, whether they were lying or not, we were promised that there would be a rematch.
They're sitting there like, we are not about to animate a whole new Hulk.
So, okay, all right. There's a couple of fundamental questions.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, my biggest prediction is that, you know, in the comic books, the way that Infinity War ends up wrapping up is Adam Warlock ends up taking the gauntlet from Thanos. I think that for sure Captain Marvel is designed to play that role.
Adam Warlock is born of which stone in the comics again?
I think it's the Mind Stone in his forehead.
So you think this time it'll be Captain Marvel who's going to step into that role because she's also kind of born of a stone?
I mean, because there's speculation on where Captain Marvel's story goes after the Infinity story.
Sure.
I think that she could launch Infinity Watch and bring about that kind of whole arc of the MC universe. And then, you know, like, I think that that's the most appropriate way to kind of spin it off, because Infinity Watch would be a great arc for them to do, and opens up you know, really taking some of the characters that may have a tough time finding a place to land after Guardians 3.
I would say, wouldn't it be amazing if Guardians 3 ends up being like delayed as it has been, if that ends up being a blessing in disguise because now it gets to play more into like Infinity Watch happening?
Like that's, I would love that.
I mean, that would be cool, but to me it's the how do you then hit not necessarily hit a reset button, but I think the only other way that you could do another convergence of characters is if you introduce Secret Wars.
Right.
So
that's always been my vote for what comes next.
So if you use that as a convergence point, wouldn't Infinity Watch be something that's already kind of above that in stakes?
Not really, because Infinity Watch was basically just guarding the Infinity Stones after they had already been split up.
But I'm saying the scale, that's already celestial in scale, and that was part of what made Secret Wars kind of special.
But it's defense, though. I think the fact that it's defense makes it inherently different. Because now that, I mean, we've already seen what happens when you bring all of the Infinity Stones together with the Gauntlet. You know what happens. So now it's about preventing that from ever happening again. And I think that that's a different compelling plot line than what ends up bringing about Secret Wars, because it wasn't it, it's the Beyonder, that starts the Secret Wars. So I think the Beyonder is a completely different threat outside of the Infinity Stones.
But I mean, they're already doing the Celestials movie, right?
The Eternals.
No, the Eternals.
Excuse me. Yeah. Well, by the way, still a way that they can introduce the Beyonder.
Well, by the way, the Eternals are a bungling bunch of dopes in the comics,
which will be starring Angelina Jolie.
Oh, interesting.
Really?
Yeah. They tapped her for it. Yeah.
And we also know we're eventually going to have like Fantastic Four and Galactus and all
Also, keep in mind that most recently they've said that because they have plans solidified for what comes after Infinity War, that it's probably going to be another phase before we get to see, at least at large, the Fox properties.
That's not surprising. Yeah,
that's not hugely surprising. So
I mean, they got to shoot the movies
as well.
So who's kind of the holdover villain in Phase One of the next saga? Because someone will be the villain of Phase One, kind of.
Well, hang on.
And then I assume Doctor Doom will appear in Phase Two.
Before we even get there, who's going to be the ultimate bad of Endgame? Because I'm not totally convinced that it's going to be Thanos.
I wasn't either, but now I don't know, man. I don't know.
The closer we get to Endgame, the more I feel like it does have to be Thanos. You know what I mean? Like, because there was a time where I wasn't convinced, but like, we've gotten this far and we've gotten no hints that there might be another villain out
there. We've got
no
hints of anything.
It'd be great. I know. It'd be great if there is. Like, if they managed to keep that secret for this long, that'd be amazing.
I mean, there's got to be some secret. But, I mean, like, I think that there is room for a bigger threat. Than Thanos.
See, I always had my finger or my idea on it being the Annihilation Wave that you know, ooh, that was triggered by the fact that the Infinity Stones have caused such a disruption that something bigger is like, you know what, we're starting it all over again.
So what, Annihilus?
Yeah, but I don't know that you could. First of all, you don't try to fit that into the end.
That's too weird.
You don't.
Yeah.
And you don't have, like, that would be such an immediate threat. You don't then have the time to build up to that afterwards.
The only thing that would even remotely make sense would be if you found out that Thanos is a Herald of Galactus.
That I think that does make sense.
It's possible. I feel like my only concern,
but that's counterproductive to Galactus because he consumes worlds.
Well, that's my only thing about that is, yeah, if there is someone who's bigger than Thanos as the final villain,
yeah,
it almost feels wasted with it having been in one movie.
But that's this is why I think that the Infinity Watch is a good overarching plot for whatever the next phase is.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, you're telling a celestial story. You can start bringing in I'm trying to remember Nova.
The Nova Corps.
Nova is primed now after what happened to Xanadar.
We even know what the fuck his origin story is going to end up being.
Yep.
So like, yeah, like bring in Nova. Start, you know, like they've really
force.
Hit on something with, you know, between Guardians of the Galaxy and now that they've got Captain Marvel, and that's been successful too. That is a way into expanding the scope of the universe.
Now, they've always wanted to do.
Now, I'm going to tell you something that's brilliant about Marvel movies. knowing that that is all of what's at stake, the celestial level of what's at stake, they still found a way to make something like Black Panther feel engaging, though the scale of that is significantly smaller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Don't we also have Moon Knight confirmed for somewhere in the next saga, too?
No, I don't think we do.
I think that was a TV series?
For a while, it was rumored that they wanted to try and do it for Netflix, but...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, obviously, that's not going to be moving forward.
Oh, man.
This
week is going to take forever.
I know, right? Like, I'm chomping at the bit to see this movie. I cannot wait. Predictions in terms of, like, what are the ramifications of Endgame and Infinity War, because, you know, I think
what's the cost of getting back the people that we know have to come back?
Well, and we do know that they do. We have a very reasonable assumption that they do come back, because
Black Panther 2 is going to be a way different movie than anyone's expecting.
Thank you.
Unless Spider-Man Far From Home is going to be a way different movie than the trailers.
Which it very well could be.
It very well could be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, by the way, all the trailers for Spider-Man Far From Home, Peter Parker's not even in it. He's still dead. He doesn't come back. You're like, geez.
They end up replacing him with Miles Morales.
Yeah, they just edited it into Peter Parker.
I would be okay with this.
Tom Holland from spoiling everything. We had to kill him.
He doesn't know yet. Don't tell him.
I think it's a reasonable assumption to figure out, like, okay, the Avengers are going to figure out how to bring people back.
Yes.
But it's going to come with a cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The speculation has been there will be time travel of some sort.
I believe
that we will see something to that.
Yeah. I think the big prevailing theory right now is that they have to go back and try and get all the stones at points just before Thanos got them.
Right. So, it's going to be kind of like that's why we're going to see the Battle of New York from this mm-hmm. kind of different perspective.
Oh.
Yeah, where they're trying to get the stone while Loki has it still in New York so that Thanos can't get it later.
That would be mighty
interesting. And in doing that, the villain can remain Thanos. It's just prior timeline's Thanos.
That's true. Interesting.
I'd be into it. If they do that right, like, I usually hate time travel stories, but if they do that right, it could be super. It's like we've built 21 movies of story.
Yeah.
If we now show you those movies from different perspectives.
And give different spins to things. Oh, like, that's what made Men in Black 3 so good.
I don't want time travel. I just don't.
Dude, I'm picturing, what if you get a sequence where... What's the guy everyone liked who died in Age of Ultron?
Coulson?
Quicksilver.
Quicksilver. Yeah.
Like, imagine a sequence where they're like, we could save Quicksilver, and they decide to be like, we can't. We're here to get a stone, man.
A scene where Wanda has to actually make the choice. Like she makes the choice to leave her brother to his fate to get the stone would be so powerful.
I usually hate time travel, but when you've built 21 movies of lore to work with,
it's kind of
prime for it.
Yeah,
imagine
right.
Pepper Potts is pregnant and something has to be sacrificed for the Reality Stone.
The Soul Stone?
Yeah, sorry, the Soul Stone.
Ah.
Yeah. So Tony has to sacrifice Pepper.
Yikes. Yikes.
Because someone has to get the Soul Stone.
Can you do that and still be the hero?
Why would Tony do that?
Yeah. Joe, you've said before that this whole, the whole Infinity
Dude,
arc.
Dude, if anything, Captain America jumps in himself.
Yeah.
The whole Infinity arc, you said,
Boy Scout.
Tony is a Greek tragedy.
Captain America can't jump in himself. You have to give up what you love most.
You have to give up what you love most. The Stone
It ain't
knows.
Captain America for Tony.
Yes. Yeah, it is.
No, it ain't. It is. Not.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
It would be Pepper.
Yeah.
What would it be for Cap?
It would be himself.
For Cap, it might be himself. Everything else he's cared about has been taken from him.
No, he'd have to don the Hydra symbol and become Nazi Captain America. It's his infatuation with America.
Listen. Don't even joke about it. They might do it. Don't even joke like that.
Yeah. But yeah, I think there's a lot of
the comic world tear itself apart when that happened.
They sure did. I was in the midst of that.
I know.
I think when you have built 21 movies of lore, you can do some interesting stuff with time travel.
You could. I just
look. Hang on. I'm with
hang
you
on.
Because time travel is either super utterly terrible or mediocre, and there's 1% where it really works.
What is your concern?
Oh, dude, it's just,
why are you worried about it?
I'm worried about it because it just makes everything feel like there's still, like, no ramifications. Like, if there's an ability to time travel, I don't care how many times they say we can only do this once. Once you do it, it can be figured out.
It's the Dragon Ball Z syndrome. Well, like, once you realize that there is time travel, you're like, no, we should be using this more.
Once you realize people can be wished back from the dead, it loses any value for anybody to actually be dead.
Okay, but no matter what, we're going to have that problem because people are coming back to life.
Well, but hang on. Yeah, because that problem is going to exist no matter if there's time travel or not, because you've got to bring the snapped people back.
Yeah.
There has to be a mechanism to bring those people back.
That's what I'm saying.
Or else future franchises in this movie will not work.
That is as much. I'm not willing to get them both. I'm not willing to give them, we could kill everybody once, or we could save everybody.
Well, that's my thinking, though, is them doing this time travel thing, they are going to lose people in that process.
Yeah.
Because we got to lose some Avengers while we're
I'm just saying.
I think what you're saying is that if that happens, then why not afterwards, once they get everybody back from the snap, let's use it again to now go save Tony and Cap.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes. Okay.
And it makes nothing have consequence.
No. I understand that. I understand that. However, there are ways that you can, through plot contrivances, be able to justify that, right?
Well, even if they, like...
How are they time traveling, I think, is the big question.
Quantum realm stuff.
If that's the case, then you're right. They could do it over and over again.
Yeah.
If they somehow get the gauntlet and all they have time for, like, they don't have the power...
They get the time stone.
They
somehow
don't actually have the power to, like, unsnap people. They just have a chance to go back in time.
Well, because we know the gauntlet doesn't work. The gauntlet was destroyed. That thing was wrecked when we saw it.
Yeah.
But if they're able to get the time stone and use that, that's a way you could argue that they did it. I mean, that would actually kind of fit in with Doctor Strange saying, like, we're in the end game now. Like,
yeah. I think whatever allows them to do the time traveling, that's limited.
But if it's the time stone, it's not limited.
Maybe it won't be. Who knows? I don't know. I don't know, man. Nobody knows.
Hang on. But that plot mechanism for going back in time already exists with the time stone. That question of why don't we go back in time to just solve problem X already exists in the MCU.
Yeah.
And it has since Doctor Strange.
So utilizing it for the Avengers, I don't think compounds that problem.
Well, especially then if we set up for Infinity Watch, where they are going to take the stones and keep them and say, no one ever uses these again. That's the rule.
There you go.
That's what the Infinity Watch is for.
There's a justification for it. That's actually, I think that's a really compelling reason to set up the Infinity Watch and make that a central part or a central theme of the next phase of the MCU.
The other issue, though, is that not just anyone's supposed to be able to pick up and use an Infinity Stone, right? So if they do use a Time Stone, what if every time we use this, the person who uses it, they're gone? That's it. To utilize the Time Stone to go back to the Battle of New York, you're gone.
Well, then
there is no getting that
person. Oh, God, they have to sacrifice an Avenger each time they go to a different period in time?
Well, then Doctor Strange would have been gone long ago.
No, because Doctor Strange was using it through the Eye of Agamotto, right? And he was only using it to affect areas of time. He wasn't affecting, like, the entire world when he did that.
Or universe.
I see where you're going.
That's why Mondo, was that his name? Basically said, you can't just keep doing this. This is gonna fuck shit up.
Yeah.
Actually, they may have sowed the seeds for this already.
They may have.
Oh.
And you know what's great about this conversation? Is we know nothing.
That's
nothing.
True.
We know absolutely
we can all
nothing.
Literally all
this
be
is all wrong.
All,
yeah, this happens.
It could very well all be wrong. I'm not going to be mad if they use time travel as a mechanic, and
especially because
I just have a general aversion to time travel.
I do too.
It's been done very, very poorly.
Yes, Norris, I'm actually on the exact same page with you, but at least when in Marvel Comics, when they've done time travel stuff, they've been very clever about it. And if I were to give anyone a pass, it would be Marvel.
Dude, going through Deadpool Secret Wars, some of the best time travel I've ever seen, and it came out of a Marvel comic.
Fantastic Four in the Ultimate Timeline, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Great
you're
time
right.
travel mechanic.
Actually, that's
yep.
great.
Oh, yeah,
so,
right.
okay. If we can all kind of agree, Thanos is likely the big bad.
Yeah.
Who are we losing? Like I know we theorize that we could be losing a lot of people, but who's most likely? I'm thinking Cap.
See, I'm going Cap, and because of the way that Tony views his own journey through this, I don't think that he gets the satisfaction of dying.
Yeah, see,
I don't think that he's going to get off scot-free.
Robbie, I'm with you because like I've gone back and forth on that. Of course, you know, you think, yeah, Tony's going to die. This has been, at the end of the day, as much as the Infinity arc, it's been the Tony Stark saga, sure, effectively.
He gets crippled in some terrible way that he is now useless.
Yeah, I don't see him dying either. I think that's a worse fate
than becoming a martyr for
him. Yes, especially because he then can't, like, and what's going to end up happening is that the only mind that could create the technology to potentially save him is him.
Well, I don't know if I necessarily see a real dark ending for him. I actually think he might come out of this for the better, where he, you know, like the Infinity arc ends and he is, you know what?
But if
I can't do this anymore. I've been going through PTSD. I've been messed up.
But think about it. If time travel is a mechanic and we do all that and we go through all that, and the rest of the Avengers collectively look at Tony and say, he's the most valuable one for us to leave.
Right.
Because of his mind, precisely because of it. It would be a blessing and a curse, because now Tony is the sole bearer of this horrible past.
I just figured
after
it out.
Everything that happened, only he knows about it.
You know, I just figured out why
that
it's
would
so
be
hard.
A worse fate for Tony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I figured out why it's so hard to do the story of Avengers Endgame and to, like, comprehend it. It's because it's the opposite of every story. Every story has a villain who has a plan, and that plan is exacerbated by the heroes counteracting parts of it. In this story, the villain's plan is done, and it's the heroes who are going to enact a plan. So what we have to figure out is not what are the heroes going to do, but how is Thanos going to throw wrenches into that plan?
Yep.
And screw things up.
And that's why I like the theory of the time traveling so much, because it doesn't rely on the critically wounded, burnt out fist Thanos.
No, it's the Thanos from those periods who is seeing his plans come apart at the seams.
Yes, and it's that Thanos that you want to beat, right? Because that's more the Mad Titan Thanos than now this guy who I don't know. I mean, Thanos was an oddly sympathetic character in Infinity War.
Yeah, he was.
And I think that you have to make him more maniacal and more threatening.
Well, then if you go back sort of arc by arc and almost tell the story in reverse, it would almost be like gradually unhinging him.
Think
about that. That's sort of like the comic book version of Momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of like telling the whole thing backwards.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It also explains, if trailers or toys are to be believed, why he now has a weapon is because if he's in the past, he didn't have the stones yet.
That's a great point.
Yep, you're right.
Have Cable kill Thanos.
There you go.
Deadpool and Cable show up at the end.
The Deus Ex Machina. Yeah, Cable and Deadpool.
Dopinder hits him with his taxi.
There you go. So before we move off of this, there's one more theory that I want to talk about. It's probably my favorite theory. I forget who brought this to the table, if it was Joe or Robbie, if it was you. But the notion that just being touched by one of the Infinity Stones can bestow someone powers.
We saw that trigger the
Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And could whatever, I mean, time travel actually seems less like it would be possible for this theory to be true. This more seems like if there's an unsnapping event.
Yeah.
Right. But the people being touched by the soul we've been told anyone who got snapped out of existence got transferred to Soul World.
And if that is true.
And so then they would all be touched by the soul gem in theory. And if unsnapping them might be the way that
the
X gene is kind of unleashed into the MCU.
I think that is one of the best theories right now I think that's a great theory.
Brilliant.
Because it may not necessarily
you can take an entire phase to start on
to sprinkle it in.
Yeah.
Because you could have a generation of the people who get unsnapped. Nothing's happened to them. Right?
Right.
But then they start having children.
And their kids start having mutations in the X gene.
And how appropriate, by the way, that the insight into that would be from Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver earlier in the MCU, who are the only crossovers into the X-Men universe.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I think that would be great. Even to an extent, that could open you up to
House of M.
Yeah. Captain Marvel, same thing, got touched by energy from the Time Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Not Time Stone.
Tesseract. That's the
right.
space
yeah.
down.
Yep. Yep.
But that, no, I agree with you. That is one of my favorite theories. I love that theory.
I've seen so many good theories about yeah. how the X-Men are going to appear. And I mean, even just whether it's the effect of the Soul Stone or not, the idea that going back to the very first monologue from Professor X and X-Men 1 and talking about every so often evolution jumps ahead a few hundred years.
Yeah. Ooh.
And literally, it, yeah. what if the X gene
is a reaction?
What if it's a human evolutionary trait in response to superheroes starting to appear and these cosmic threats starting to threaten? What if the X gene is a evolutionary response?
A natural evolutionary yeah. response.
I love that idea.
That's also a great idea.
Omega Weltaw in the chat over at twitch.tv/checkpointxp says that could be cool. Mutants, Rogue could drain. Carol.
That's, I mean, people have been saying that since, you know, Captain yeah. Marvel came out. I get it. But
I actually don't think Rogue's that compelling.
But the thing is that I think that is a wonderful door into, you know, bringing in the X-Men in, you know, say phase 4 or whatever that is.
That's what I'm saying, because that's something you could take your time getting to.
Exactly.
You wouldn't have to do that in the next movie.
Right.
Yeah. No, you could do that in, I guess,
that could be
ostensibly phase 5.
That could
right?
be your post-credit yeah. sequence for the entire phase. Right?
If every movie in phase 4 has a post-credit sequence of someone discovering their powers.
Yeah.
Then it leads into X-Men.
Do you guys think that Endgame, this is something that I saw flying around, do you think that Endgame should have a post-credit scene? Since it's the end of the saga,
no.
should it
no.
just end?
No,
I don't think it should.
I think it should.
What should it be then, Norris? Are you just thinking
no idea.
To the next movie or to
I'll
the next
this.
Phase?
If it's something like setting up the Infinity Watch, I'll live with it. But yeah. I don't know what else you do unless they do it.
Something benign is Spider-Man's neck, so we're teasing Spider-Man.
Or their Stan Lee cameos. The end game post-credit sequence.
Oh, I could see that. I could see that.
I'll be fine with the Stan Lee cameo.
That would be okay. I would be okay with
that.
That
would be nice.
But yeah, no, I think if they set up Infinity Watch through the actual story, that if that's what they end on, I'm okay with
it. But here's the good part about all this, though. A cap on this whole Marvel Cinematic Universe experiment. Is a fact that they've still written it in such a way that you could say, I see where this could go even from here.
Yeah.
Like, that's still a mark of pretty...
Dude, this is the end of the Infinity Saga. There's plenty of other yes, sagas they could dive
that's
into.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I
After
am
21
totally
movies,
okay
yeah.
with comic book movies damn near becoming like comic books themselves, and you always have a good one to read.
There are more movies than there were comics in the Infinity War, I think.
Oh, in terms of like actual Infinity War
books? In terms of issues. How many issues was in the Infinity War?
I don't even remember. And I think there might have been 8 total from start of the Infinity War to the end.
Yeah. I mean, there's tie-ins from basically everyone.
There's a lot of tie-ins.
There were so many tie-ins. Yeah, so there's probably not. The point is, the numbers are comparable, and that's ridiculous.
Right. So, I don't know. I guess...
6.
Wow.
There were 6 in the mainline Infinity War books?
Yep.
And that's probably a tie-in for at least 20 or so different heroes?
Yep.
Yeah, there was a lot.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of tie-ins.
Yeah. Lots.
They probably beat them out with the tie-ins. Yeah.
I want to say that at the time they tried...
No, it's about even with the tie-ins.
I want to say at the time they tried to converge all plot lines into...
They did.
Infinity
oh, they
War.
Absolutely did.
Yeah.
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 All right. Well, listen, we want to hear from you. How hype are you for Endgame? God, I can't even believe that it's 1 week away.
I know.
This is
oh,
ridiculous.
My God.
Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. That's going to be it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, checkpointxp.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a full archive of episodes, podcasts, and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern live at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan, producing and booking help from Christine Solis, and of course my co-hosts who pull double duties as producers for Checkpoint XP. Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Abe Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming.
Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.